presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Good evening and welcome. It's nice to have your company once again on Live on ERA, the Irish programme here on Talk Radio Europe. Coming up this evening on the programme, I think we have a rather exciting programme. Peter O'Dwyer will talk to us about Brexit and Ireland. George Lee will be looking back at some of the stories that had people in Ireland talking over the past week. In fact, you and I are probably talking about similar things here in Spain. County Waterford Man has been organising unique events around classical music in and around Spain. Shane O'Shea, talking to him later in the programme. In fact, I went out and met him during the week, so you'll hear that recording. We have some famous Irish birthdays coming up this week on the programme that might be of interest to you. We'll take a look at some of the things that happened on this coming week in history relating to Ireland, and there's quite a lot around this time of the year. Don't forget, if you would like to get in contact with the programme, I would love to hear from you. As always, you can email Ger, G-E-R, at T-R-E. Radio. Now, that is specifically for any subject, but I'm looking for people to let me know about St. Patrick's Day events happening. Wherever you happen to be listening, let me know. Don't assume that I already know, because we want to cover as much of that as we possibly can. And that's not too far away, just 6 weeks away now at this stage. Right, let's have a look at some of those famous birthdays. In fact, we've got some not so famous in there this week. I'll explain to you in just a moment. Today, the 4th of February, Patrick Bergan, the actor, was born in Dublin 68 years ago. Robert Emmet, the Irish patriot, was born in 1775. Countess Constance Markievicz, that's not easy to say, the Irish patriot and politician. We spoke to somebody about a brand new book in relation to Countess Markievicz a number of weeks ago on the programme. And so we mark her birthday today. Right, nothing tomorrow, but Wednesday, the 6th of February, Jim Sheridan, the director, was born in Dublin in 1949, so happy 70th birthday to him. Bernard Dunn, the boxer, was born in Dublin 39 years ago, 1980. And Margaret, better known as Margot O'Donnell, the singer from County Donegal, was born 68 years ago on Wednesday. Thursday is the 7th of February. Rory O'Hanlon, politician, was born in 1934. He's no longer with us. Isn't he father of the man who, Artilod O'Hanlon, who played Father Dougal in Father Ted? I think that's the very man. Saturday, the 9th of February, Brendan Behan, writer and character, born in Dublin in 1923. Garrett Fitzgerald, former Irish Taoiseach and leader of the Fine Gael party, was born in Dublin in 1926. And Edward Carson, the Ulster Unionist politician, was born in Dublin, of all places, in 1854 on the 9th of February. Sunday, next week, is the 10th of February. John Magnier, the businessman, former senator, horse breeder. He was born in Fermoy, 1948, so he's celebrating his 71st birthday today. I did mention there was going to be some non-famous birthdays in there. I want to mention two ladies who celebrate their birthdays this week, on Friday, to be precise. Well, the 8th of February is my mam's birthday, so a very happy birthday to my mam. Celebrated a big, big birthday last year, so she said, "Ara, this year is just an ordinary birthday," but we like to give a mention anyway. And another lady who was indeed a lady who's no longer with us, a lady by the name of Una Houlihan, would have been celebrating her birthday as well. And I know the family members listen, so we give Una a mention on the programme. We did say that Margot was celebrating her birthday. She from County Donegal, she sister of Daniel O'Donnell. And we like to have the birthdays dictate some of the music that we play on the programme. So here she is, all the way from County Donegal. She will be 68 on Wednesday. This is Margot, and Come to the Bower on Live on ERA, the Irish programme, in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Will you come, will you come to the Bower? Will you come to the Bower, or the free boundless ocean, where stupendous waves roll in thunder and motion, where the mermaids are seen and the fierce tempest gathers to love there in the green, the dear land of our fathers? Will you come? Will you come to the Bower? Will you come to the land of O'Neill and O'Donnell, the patriot soldiers of Tyrone and Tyrconnell, where King Brian drove the Danes in St. Patrick the Vermin, and whose valleys remain still most beautiful and charming. Will you come? Will you, will you, will you come to the Bower? You can visit Benburb and the story Blackwater, your own Rome at Monroe and his chieftains did slaughter. You may ride on the tide or the broad majestic Shannon, you may sail round Loch Ness and see story Dungannon. Will you come, will you, will you come to the Bower? Visit New Ross, Gallen, Wexford and Gorey, where the green was last seen by proud Saxon and Tory, where the soil is sanctified by the blood of each true man, where they died satisfied their enemies they would not run from. Will you come, will you, come to the Bower? Come, will you come to the Bower?
It's a lady that's going to be celebrating her 68th birthday, if she's telling the truth, on Wednesday of this week. That is Margot O'Donnell from County Donegal, a song called Come to the Bower. Danny Doyle, I remember from the early 1970s, singing that song. In fact, my first memory of that song was from Danny Doyle all those years ago. Anyway, let's take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. We'll be talking to George Lee about some of the stories that had Irish people talking in the past week.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
We'd like to take a look back at some of the stories that may not have been absolutely huge, but got people thinking and talking back in Ireland over the past week or so. Now, I'm not capable of doing this on my own, so we bring in George Lee. George, how are you?
Not too bad at all, Ger.
Good.
The January weather here.
Well, it's now February, so you're a little bit behind. Anyway, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. Well, joking aside, the weather has played havoc, I know, on the roads of Ireland, but we started the week with road safety being very much to the fore in Ireland because of the horrible accident that happened last weekend in County Donegal.
Yes, Ger, it was about bedtime last Sunday night when news started to filter through that four young lives were lost in Donegal in a single vehicle car crash. Look, this is every parent's nightmare, I suppose, to get that knock on the door. But the tragedy brought the number of people killed on Irish roads across the country to 10. Now, all through the week, there was considerable commentary on all the media and watching the TV pictures the other evening from Donegal and the funerals. One couldn't but be struck by, number one, the absolute beauty and the grief transposed on top of it. It just was heartbreaking, is the only word. I know that Maya Doherty and the Road Safety Authority are very much to the fore in the way in which they're approaching things. I do think that maybe a root and branch look needs to be done at road safety. But one of the things that strikes me is that, for instance, the driver's testing in Ireland is not done at night. It's not done on country roads.
True.
And it's not done on motorways. And there are three areas that are very, very high risk within the whole driving sphere. And I think until such time as we start to incorporate all aspects of driving, well, then, you know, we really are asking for trouble.
All right. A County Kildare man made headlines over the week or during the week. He raised concerns about a new cemetery being created in Rathangan. What was that story all about?
He raises this old Christian tradition that is customary in numerous religions. It's not just Christianity, but that the graves are aligned towards the sun. Now, this comes from the ancient tradition and the biblical idea that, you know, when the final trumpet sounds, that we all rise and face the sun. The man in question, Eamon Brown, said that he always believed that this should be the case, but in the new graveyard being prepared by Kildare County Council, the graves will face south.
Okay.
He said he met with officials at Kildare County Council, and they said they would be sensitive to his concerns and would make arrangements for him to make sure he faced east if he wished.
And tell me, had you any clue that graves were set and aligned in a particular way?
Well, as you know, Ger, I'm fairly strange about things, and yes, I did. I would have, it would have always been a tradition in Ireland that graves would face the sun.
Never thought about it. Moving on, and despite a climate of political uncertainty and anxiety, a notable calm oozed over the corner, or one particular corner, of Leinster House during the week. Tell me about our chilled out representatives.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, really. Today, senators and their office staff have been afforded the opportunity to partake in an 8-week mindfulness pilot program. And according to the organisers, week one was booked out. And now, mindfulness, as you know, Ger, and I know you do, according to the Cambridge Dictionary, is the practice of being aware of one's mind, body and feelings in the present moment, thought to create a feeling of calm. Bringing mindfulness to the Oireachtas stemmed from a visit, and this is the part that really I enjoy, by the head of the Women's Caucus and Deputy Green Party leader, Catherine Martin, to the first World Summit on Mindfulness Politics in London 2 years ago. I suppose she had to bring something back.
She had indeed. Yeah, but mindfulness is becoming such a huge part of people's lives now. Is that to offset the chaos that currently exists?
It is, Chair. And again, this is something, without being flippant about it, this is something that people find that they need. I suppose mindfulness for a lot of people over the generations would have been religion. And I suppose as the decline of religion has come in, people need to look into their own hearts to find some place that they can have a haven from their thoughts. And mindfulness certainly is a way of doing that.
Mindfulness for someone like me, and indeed many indeed our generation, would be a walk on the beach or a walk in a country laneway or somewhere like that, just to be alone with your thoughts.
Well, mindfulness for me is West Clare, as you know, just to go and see the ocean and his strong heart stirs the ever-beating sea, as Joseph Mary Plunkett would have said.
All right. Well, listen, mindfulness is very much built into healthcare, and healthcare very much in the news in Ireland. A strike by almost 40,000 nurses and midwives belonging to the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation went ahead on Wednesday. How did it go?
Yes, sir. And this is actually the third time that we've mentioned this over the weeks. Yes. And it went off very well for them, getting the public behind them. As the nurses took to the pickets, they did so with the support of over 75% of the Irish public. One will have to say, and I suppose I wonder as time goes on and, you know, people's appointments begin to become cancelled and it's beginning to kick in, and whether that will remain so. But the INMO has scheduled a further 5 24-hour strikes over the coming fortnight, and they've even added to that. The dates, just for the record, are the 5th and 7th of February, the 12th and 14th of February, and with the addition of the 19th and the 21st of February as well.
The Cabinet has agreed to hold a referendum to ease restrictions on divorce. What are they doing?
And again, I think this probably shows how the country has changed since the referendum. And looking it up during the week, the 15th Amendment to the Irish Constitution was brought in 1995. That's all of 24 years ago. And at that time, there was a mandatory period of separation required before divorce. And the couples are required to have lived apart for 4 out of the previous 5 years. Now, that's the idea. Idea is that that will be changed to 2 years out of the previous 3.
Okay. Now, speaking of divorce, Brexit is a divorce of sorts, and that has some ramifications for our next story, because Ireland gets to have 2 more MEPs when we go to the polls and we elect people, so they're restructuring constituencies. And I'm told this week that 2 of the 13 Irish MEPs that will be elected in this year's European Parliament elections may not be allowed to take up their seats due to the ongoing Brexit chaos.
Yeah, this is a strange one. It really is. And I suppose it just ties into the whole madness that's going on around Brexit, and the fact that people really don't know what's going on any number of levels. We're playing this by the seats of the pants. Yes, Tuesday's Cabinet approved a new bill to assign an extra 2 seats in the European Parliament elections in May. Ireland has been allotted these as an additional 2 seats as part of the redistribution of the seats due to the Brexit. Who decides what elected members would lose out is yet to be determined. And this could be the big political football, I would say. Mm-hmm. One option being considered is that MEPs with the lowest votes would be the ones kind of put on ice. And the other options would include making 2 MEPs wait until Brexit legally comes into operation before taking up those proceeds.
And the island of Ireland has a new political party. Tell us about it.
It has, yeah. Former Sinn Féin TD Padraig Tobin revealed the name of his new party during the week, and he called it AIM2. What does that mean, Sisu?
AIM2,
Unity or Agreement. It's interesting because during the week, listening to the coverage of this, he has managed to convince a number of elected councillors to join him, with some leading established parties, such as Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, to do so. And apparently he has built up 1,400 of a membership signed up.
Oh.
And this makes him actually bigger than the Social Democrats, Russian Shorthogs Party. Again, just playing into the whole political scene in Ireland in the next while. If we have an election, who knows? They may hold a balance power.
It's not easy to set up a new political party, though. Sure, it's not. I suppose the most successful in recent times would have been the Progressive Democrats back in the 1980s, and that didn't last, 20, 25 years?
Des O'Malley and Mary Harney set up the Progressive Democrats way back then. But they did have more of a mainstream, I would say, behind them than either Padraig Tobin's party or the Social Democrats. Mm. Quite apart from the bureaucratic side of how to set up a political party, getting a mainstream of support in Ireland, I suppose, behind any party other than the main political parties would be very difficult.
All right. Now, this next story kind of ties into the first story that we had in relation to road safety, but the responsibilities that we all have in relation to how we use social media platforms has been very much in the news recently.
This perturbs me, and perturbs me greatly. I have a contention that unless we start using the internet correctly, it's going to eat itself. And I said this for an awfully long time. People have this absolute need to get likes or to get affirmation online. And the family of a woman who died in a collision on the M50 over a week ago condemned the circulation of videos and photographs that were taken at the crash scene. And they urged the public not to share them on social media platforms. Mm. A young lady called Jackie Griffin, she died in a multi-vehicle collision on a slip road just off the M50. And there was a number of photographs and videos taken, and they were circulated online. Now, it was very interesting the way that this took off, because those videos were put out, and up to a point, people had no problem sharing them. And then there was this main story came in, and then everybody that shared them was condemned, rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that thought that this was edifying, we need to look at what we're doing here with the internet.
It does, and the speed at which those pictures and videos were actually circulated was frightening. So let's hope we've actually learned something and it might change our ways on social media. Now, we mentioned the ongoing controversy of the cost overrun for the proposed new National Children's Hospital recently. We're not going to get into the innards of it, but there was developments on Saturday.
Tom Costello, who's chair of the board, stepped down on Saturday, and I'm very minded in this story for some reason to remember what Albert Reynolds said at one point. In politics and in government, it will always be the small things that get you. Not that I'm saying that 2 billion euros is a small thing, but, 3 weeks ago, this was not a story. Now it's become a major story, and the government are doing an awful lot of firefighting on this. I mean, Simon Harris was out during the week being very strong on it. Leo Varadkar has got involved in it. I think this story has the potential to possibly cause a schism in the government.
Hmm. I am reading a book at the moment, which is about the transfer of power in America. Michael Lewis wrote it, called The Fifth Risk. It's about the transfer of power between the Obama administration and the Trump administration. And we know very much that Russia has been linked to that election. Now, the Irish government is in the process of upgrading its IT security for very similar reasons. They're afraid of the Russians.
Exactly. And it's funny that you should mention that, because when I was reading over my notes on this earlier on, I just put a headline on it: the Russians are coming. And again, we can be flippant about it, and we can look at it, but it does feed into the whole European story as well. And maybe there's a bit of paranoia going on with the American system and how Russia infiltrated the last election. But the European elections coming up are obviously critical as well in charting the way forward for Europe. Europe, particularly at this critical time. But the Irish government is in the process of upgrading its IT security across the various departments ahead of these elections. And according to the journal.ie, which is a super Irish news site, sophisticated cyber security features were added to the internal infrastructure of many government departments in recent weeks.
Dublin man Derek Mahan, great old story this. He has reached the summit of South America's highest peak this week.
And you're going to be very, very, very pleased with me, Derek. I can actually pronounce it. It's Aconcagua is the name of the mountain.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. It's a fantastic story because severe altitude sickness had stopped him from making it to the top this time last year. So well done to Derek. He's from Nall in County Dublin, and he revisited the climb as part of a plan to summit the world's seventh highest peaks in support of GROW, which is the mental health charity. This is the highest summit in the southern hemisphere and outside of the Himalayas. So well done to Derek.
Well done to Derek.
A big thing for him.
A good story. Now, a not-so-good story. Ireland's Six Nations opening game against England in Dublin. Somewhat of a damn squib, I think.
And it was, and it wasn't, Jerry. Look, Six Nations is fantastic.
It is.
I've been looking forward to it for the last number of weeks. Ireland were soundly beaten, 32-20. Now, that doesn't suddenly make them a bad team. They are still possibly the second best team in the world. Look, England did their homework. They outmuscled them. It's a bad day at the office, but let's move on to Scotland next week.
Yeah, of course, that's in Murrayfield, so it could be a daunting task for the Irish as well.
Yes, and looking at Scotland, they are a tight unit, and Hogg really has come into his own, and he's a world-class player. So I think that's where a lot of the strategy that the Scottish employed, they were around Hogg. So I would say that Ireland will be looking at that. What I did note in the match, however, was there did seem to be quite a lot of targeting of Keith Earls in the early part of the match. And that really doesn't augur well, I think, in rugby. The players are individually targeted.
All right. Well, look, onwards and upwards. George, thanks very much, as always, for joining us to have a look back at the past week. Always entertaining. Have yourself a good week, and we'll chat next week.
Talk to you then, Ger. Thanks.
Yeah.
There's a man that is a great character. He had a group one time called the Mud Bug Club. It was difficult to say. I'm glad he doesn't have it anymore. That's Jerry Fish, a song called My Friend Jim. Let's do a very quick break. I told you that I met Shane O'Shea, a County Waterford man, during the week. We had a bit of a chat, and you can hear that just after these.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Well, as you know, I like to always find Irish people. We lift stones, we look behind trees, we do all sorts of things to do that. And a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Justine Haughey from the Kempinski. And Justine mentioned about some of the musical events that they hold at the hotel. And she said, you should talk to a man called Shane O'Shea, because Shane is the man responsible for it. So here I am. I tracked him down. Shane, good to talk to you.
You too. Thanks.
Shane, you're a Waterford man. Tell me about your journey to here.
Oh my, have you got a few hours? I am from Waterford, yes. I have travelled around the world performing, arranging music events. Now, for the last 3 odd years, I organise music events in the Costa del Sol, classical music events in the Costa del Sol, and in my home city in Waterford, amongst other places, kind of bespoke, quirky style events, not in traditional concert halls or spaces, but in nice, intimate venues for 40, 50, 60 people, where the people themselves, the audience, can feel a real part of what the event is.
The love of music is not age specific, but for a young person to embark on a career in classical music, where did the love come from?
I started when I was 5 or 6 years of age. Probably a pushy Irish mother, I'd say, was the first step, getting me out to piano lessons, getting me out to trumpet lessons. Then at 8 or 9, I joined the local brass band in the city. Fantastic what they do. You get a free instrument, you get free lessons, they teach you theory of music, and that still exists in the city of Waterford. There are 2 or 3 bands down there that do that still. And then it just catches on, and going through senior school, where all my friends were panicking about what to do with their lives and what university to go to or what to study or what to do, it just seemed like a natural progression for me to go on and study music. And I then went to Trinity College in Dublin and studied music there and had a great time. Probably more social than I should have been, but it was a fantastic time.
And you were in the Middle East, I believe, for a number of years playing music?
Middle East, Asia, all over that side of the world. Arranging events and doing lots. It was very different, very diverse what I was doing. If something needs to be done, we just got down and did it. And we created many opportunities for ourselves, as I think you'd have to do as a young musician. It's what I think my advice to any young musician is: don't wait for opportunities to come your way. Get out there, promote yourself. Social media is there for you now. Get everything out there and work yourself on that side just as much as you do in a practice room.
So in your travels, were you looking for the support of the Irish communities?
On my travels, no, not necessarily. I was always a part of the Irish communities, especially when I was in Seoul in South Korea. I've attended many an Irish function. And always, my first travelling, when it was 2001, and I ended up in Seoul in South Korea, I was writing musicals for kids in English for an SBSI, a kids' TV channel, and it lasted 3 or 4 years doing that, and actually went to the World Cup when I was over there in 2002, when Ireland came and played one game in South Korea. First thing I did when I got there, because it was so alien to me, was I straight online onto the internet and typed in Irish Network Korea. And there was one. So I emailed out to a few people and I met Irish people over there in Seoul. We all became great friends and followed the World Cup and everything together. So I've reached out, but never been a real active member of Irish societies overseas. But I would go when I could go to events and whenever they would have on.
So here you are in Spain. Project Music is the name of the organization that you work under. So what do you do?
Project Music is a group that brings in international classical musicians to the Costa del Sol. So every month we try to arrange 3 events or soirees, whatever one would like to call them these days, in 3 different locations. And we're very conscious of keeping them intimate, as I mentioned earlier, and trying to offer something exquisite, be it a glass of wine, some cava, some tapas, some canapés, or a 3-course meal with the music in the middle. Our musicians tend to have played in some of the finest venues from Carnegie Hall through, and they like to come over here because they get to sit on the beach, have some sangria, and relax and have some fun. So I sell it to them as a working holiday for the musician. That's why they come, because it's not, Costa del Sol is not a known place for classical music. So for them, it is just to come over, perform, and then go on to their regular tours or whatever they're doing. So we operate that about 10 months of the year, not in July and August, and we have built up quite a nice following of people that are resident here. Many nationalities come, and for some it has now become a social monthly high point for them, where they meet regular faces, like a family of concert goers. So it's slow, it's building, but it's very worthwhile.
And as you say, many nationalities would attend those events, but is there a high proportion of Irish people?
We have a strong proportion of Irish people. If we operate out near the Alveria Way or out towards La Cala, we have a percentage of Irish people. If we're operating in Marbella, we have a percentage of Irish people. So I would say we would have at least, if we have 50 people coming, we'd have at least 6 to 10 Irish people of the 50 at each of the events.
This programme will be broadcast to a lot of areas other than the Costa del Sol, and Irish people love to support other Irish people, and when they hear maybe that an Irish person is doing this, could you bring that on the road?
Yes, we could. It's difficult only to the point of needing more people to help. What we do can be dropped in anywhere. All it needs is that quirky space and the will of a venue or a place to work with us. We've put on black tie soirees in Waterford Castle, which were absolutely outrageously outstanding. And we are looking at some castles here in Spain that might be interested to do something similar. So yes, it can be dropped in. It's a matter of manpower.
Okay, so what's the future for you?
Oh, I don't know. I hope it's good. Well, we have our next soirees are on in February here in Spain, the 21st, the 23rd and the 24th of February. We have a wonderful soprano coming in from America. She's going to put on a concert that I'm working on with her called Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It'll be a mix of opera arias, Spanish classical, and music from musical theatre. So there'll be something there for everybody. That's the next one for us here in Spain, and she's wonderful. There'll be three wonderful, wonderful events.
So, Shane, if somebody wants to get more information on Project Music and indeed the events, where can they find it?
We have a Facebook page. If they just type in Project Music or Project Music Management, it will come up, and they can just like the page, and all the events appear up on that. We update that nearly every day. Our email address, pmmtickets@mail.com. So it's pmmtickets@mail.com. Don't be put off by tickets being in the email address. It doesn't mean if you email us you're buying tickets. You can just send in an inquiry about what we do. Send us your email address. We can add you then to our database. We send out a newsletter once, stroke twice per month, updating everybody on what we are doing, what events are on and where, and how to attend them. So join us. Become a part of our family.
Shane, thank you very much for talking to us. Shane O'Shea from Waterford. We wish you well in the future.
Thank you, Ger.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger, you may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know. That somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing, you may hear her laughing across a crowded room, and night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing explain it, who can tell you why? Fool.
a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. Or all through your life you may dream of alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never let her go.
That's a beautiful song, isn't it? From a man that you've heard on the programme before. That's Jerry Lynch. Do you remember at Christmas time I played Silent Night 1913, written by Cormac McConnell, and interviewed Cormac when it was Jerry sang that song from Kilfenora. Jerry Lynch and Some Enchanted Evening. Right, let's take a look at some of the stories that were making headlines in Ireland, the history stories. Today, the 4th of February, 1921, Sir James Craig succeeded Lord Edward Carson, whom we mentioned a short time ago, as Ulster Unionist leader. 1992, an off-duty RUC officer in Belfast killed three people in a Sinn Féin office before committing suicide. 1992, on the 4th of February, Mary Robinson became the first Irish president to visit Belfast. Tuesday, the 5th of February, 1960. The Musicians' Union banned the Rolling Stones' Let's Spend the Night Together from Eamon Andrews' television show. Wow, they had some power in those days, didn't they, the unions? On the 5th of February, back in 2003, the trial of three Irishmen charged with training members of the FARC guerrilla movement resumed in Bogota in Colombia. And in 2006, on that day, former Bishop of Galway, Eamon Casey, returned to Ireland after 14 years in exile. The cleric fled the country after he admitted to fathering a son. Wednesday is the 6th of February, and on that date, back in 1900, John Redmond was elected leader of the Irish Party. 1933, 2RN is superseded by Radio Athlone. That then went on to become Radio Éireann. It's now RTE. Used to be 2RN back in those days. 2011, on the 6th of February, renowned rock guitarist Gary Moore died in a hotel room while on holiday in Spain. Originally from Belfast, he was a former member of the legendary Irish group Thin Lizzy. Indeed he was. We'll take a track from him very shortly. Thursday is the 7th of February, 1991. On that day, the IRA fired at least three mortar bombs at 10 Downing Street. They failed to detonate. Friday is the 8th of February, and on that day, this is a great story. Wait till you hear this now. In the year 2000, Boyzone's Keith Duffy was officially declared Ireland's sexiest man by a prestigious panel of judges. Really? Keith won out over an impressive list of handsome hunks. Listen to this. Including Garda Commissioner Pat Byrne, Fine Gael Deputy Ivan Yates, actor Noel Pearson, and ESAT multimillionaire Dennis O'Brien. Dancer Supreme Michael Flatley, comedian Brendan O'Carroll, and the inimitable Jackie Healy Ray TD also featured on the sexiest list. Well, thank God I wasn't on that list. The year 2000, on the 8th of February, US President Bill Clinton made it clear to the Irish and British governments that he is ready to become actively involved in trying to save the Northern Ireland government if needed. It was in 2011, on that date, that the last sketch by artist Jack B. Yeats, drawn while he lay dying in a Dublin nursing home, sold at auction in London for £5,760. Saturday is the 9th of February, 1932. On that day, the Army Comrades Association was formed, later to be called the National Guard and nicknamed the Blue Shirts in Ireland. On that date in 1996, the IRA ended its ceasefire with the London Docklands bombing. It killed two people and injured 100. In the year 2001, Limerick man Michael Noonan was elected leader of the Fine Gael Party. Sunday, the 10th of February, 1844, Daniel O'Connell was convicted of conspiracy, fined and sentenced to 12 months in prison. 1999, a potential major tragedy was averted when over 100 mine workers were airlifted to safety after a fire 1,150 feet below the ground at Tara Mines in Navan. 2011, six confirmed dead as a plane crashed at Cork Airport. The Manx 2 airline flight from Belfast to Cork overturned and caught fire while making a third attempt to land. There we go, a lot in that today for you. We did make reference to the fact that Gary Moore died back in 2011, and this week we will commemorate that. that. And let's take a track from him right now. Here's a track that he released back around 1985 called Parisian Walkways.
Michelle and old Beaujolais wine, and I recall that you were mine in those Parisian days.
Parisian Walkways from the wonderful Gary Moore, who died on this week back in 2011. Peter O'Dwyer is coming up very shortly.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Well, it's that time of the day again, or that time of the week. We take a look at what's happening in relation to Ireland and Brexit, exclusively Ireland and Brexit. And to do that on a weekly basis, Peter O'Dwyer joins me from the Times Ireland. He is the senior business reporter there. Peter, good to talk to you again.
Same, Ger. Thanks.
Is it my imagination, or we know about the vote in the Commons last week, but really all that I've heard or that I've read has been about, well, look, we can change that, but we want to change it. Well, you can change it. Is there anything else happening?
I think there's a whole lot of head scratching happening in Dublin and probably in Brussels as well. Nobody's really sure what the British government is doing and what the Commons is doing at this stage. As you said, Theresa May, after spending 2 years negotiating a deal and then insisting that it was the only deal on the table last week, did a U-turn and asked her MPs to vote against her own deal. So you can imagine how aghast everybody in Dublin was at that. We have Simon Coveney writing in the Sunday Times, essentially just laying out why, again, the backstop is needed and why it won't be renegotiated. He's in pretty stark terms, I suppose, saying that he spells it out specifically and says it's time for the UK to keep its word. It has signed up to the backstop. It has reiterated that on a number of occasions. And that to scrap it really would not only pose difficulties for people on both sides of the Irish, Northern Irish border in terms of trade and just, you know, daily commutes and that kind of thing, but he's reiterating the fact that really it's a fragile peace that currently exists in the north of Ireland, and that to do so, to scrap the backstop, would jeopardise that. He's spelling out again that there's no credible alternatives from anybody put on the table, so the backstop really is the only show in town. And the only olive branch, I suppose, he's giving is that he's saying that Brussels and Ireland are prepared to have a look again at the political declaration that came out a couple of months ago, simply just to ramp up the language in that and to put on the table a more comprehensive, wide-ranging type of agreement that they're going to look to secure in terms of the future trading agreement. So they're willing to give a little more on that in terms of wording, but he's just reiterating the fact again that the backstop must stay and that there would be no withdrawal agreement without it.
Do you think that Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney and co. are nervous that the EU will sell us down the river?
Yeah, this is something that kind of crops up every now and then, and I think the answer for the time being remains the same, that there has been no indication yet that that's the case. If anything, it's been the complete opposite. We've seen time and time again EU spokespeople, the head honchos in Brussels, coming out and reaffirming their support for Ireland, really. And when you look at some of the details that are emerging, Leo Varadkar this week is going to go to Brussels. He's going to meet with Donald Tusk and Jean-Claude Juncker. They're going to talk about the fact that the UK could crash out without a deal. Got Coveney is going to go to Brussels. You've got Michael Creed, the agriculture minister, has supposedly struck a deal with Brussels to secure hundreds of millions in support for farmers if the UK crash out. Heather Humphreys met with Steger, the EU competition director, last week, and supposedly they spoke about easing state aid rules if a no-deal scenario comes to pass.
Okay.
So it seems like the Irish government has an open door to anybody that they want in Brussels at the moment, and that they're getting pretty good feedback in terms of support if a no-deal scenario arises.
I just worry that sometimes when you hear a Prime Minister or a Taoiseach or a President saying that they have the utmost faith in somebody and support them 100%, that means that they're just about to resign because they've been told to resign, and I just worry that sometimes the EU would be playing the very same game. You seem to be confident enough that they aren't.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Premier League manager when the chairman comes out and gives them a vote of confidence, and then in the morning they're out on their ear. But by mutual consent, yeah, to pursue other exciting career opportunities somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think that fear is understandable. I think that concern will probably always be there with Irish people and the EU, given that, you know, we were told to go back and vote again on some of the referenda in recent times. The fact that we are a small nation and that, you know, there's 26 others staying in the EU, and they all have their own priorities and domestic situations that they have to keep an eye on. So there's always that concern that patience or support might wane eventually for Ireland. But you can only go on what we've seen so far. And to be fair, it has been a steadfast commitment and support that we've seen for the Irish position up until this point. That could change, but it doesn't look like it will so far.
All right. I want one more question, if that's all right. I was talking to George Lee a little earlier on about reviewing some of the stories that made headlines in the past week in Ireland. And one of those was the fact that we are now going to be electing 13 MEPs in Ireland this time round, and other nations will be electing additional MEPs as well, because the UK seats or the British seats are being redistributed throughout the EU. But we saw during the week that 11 of the 13 will take their seats automatically, but two of them may not because of the Brexit chaos. What's going to happen if Brexit is extended? Will Britain not have any representation in Europe because they surely won't be allowed to contest the elections? Or how is that going to work?
Yeah, as far as I understand it, that's how it's going to work, which would leave a bit of a vacuum. But yeah, that's my understanding, that basically the elections will obviously go ahead regardless of what happens with Brexit. And if the can is to be kicked down the road, that there would be just this void left for the time being, which is not exactly an ideal scenario, but it looks like that's what might happen. Another unintended consequence of Brexit, I suppose.
Absolutely. All right, Peter, thank you very much for joining us. I look forward to chatting to you next week on the programme in relation to Ireland and Brexit. Peter O'Dwyer is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland.
Perfect.
And that's where I'm going to leave things for this week. I hope that you have enjoyed the programme as much as I have enjoyed putting it together and presenting it to you. Thank you to all of my guests on the programme today. Thank you, most importantly, for listening. And can I say, as always, a big thank you to my good friend, Jose Antonio Sierra, who is our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant on the programme. Thank you, Jose Antonio. I'm going to leave you with this track. It comes from a lady by the name of Gina. If you're Irish and you were dancing in the 1970s and 80s, you would have probably danced to Gina Dalehays and the Champions. Well, here she is, taking us back to the 1980s in a song called Give Me Back My Love. Until next week, look after yourselves and each other. Bye-bye now.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
I waited all night long just to see your face, but you didn't show. Now I hate this place. I never had the luck to find a man so true.